Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Male. My name is Alan Gigax, and I am here with a special guest, Virgilio Goze from Seattle, from the NALC. What was it, Branch 79? Do I remember that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
All right, good deal. So he is from Branch 79 in Seattle, and that, for those of you who are longtime listeners to Classes of Male, you'll know that is the home of C. Moline, who is definitely one of the best guests we've ever had on Classes of Male. So, Virgilio, you got some big shoes to fill, but Tyler recommended that I talk to you, and whatever Tyler Vassar says, he always steers me in the right direction. So, hey, man, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, welcome. Thank you also for inviting me here, Glasses of Mail.
Yeah, you bet.
And I've listened to a couple of episodes.
Nice. All right. Thanks for those downloads. Hey, so before we get into the content of today's program, what is your role in Branch 79?
So right now, I am currently Sergeant in Arms for NALC Branch 79 in Seattle.
Oh, dude.
I am also formal aid designee for the Seattle installation. And informally, alternate shop steward for my station, which is Wallingford Station.
Wallingford Station?
Yes.
I think I know that name because there was a steward there who did the Dignity and Respect today.
Yes, he is my primary shop steward.
Okay.
Ralph Kuhlman.
Yeah, that's the guy. Yeah, Kuhlman. Yeah. He,
very infamous.
He's not fired again, is he?
Oh, Matt, he's in the notice of removal proceedings.
Again?
So, you know, we're fighting for his job back.
Oh, dude, that guy. Hey, listeners, if you want some really interesting listens, go back and find DART, Dignity and Respect Today. This guy talks about his fights with management, and it's legendary. And man, this guy, he mixes it up with management for sure. So he's fired again,
yeah.
You say.
You know, he's a great fighter for our workers at the shop room floor, and that's why management targets him. You know, they don't like his, you know, style. We have different styles of shop stores, right?
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of like a good cop, bad cop routine in my station.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's hard to be a badder cop than him. So, man, I should get him on the show at some point because, his stories, you know, his interactions with management are, it's incredible how aggressive management will be, how they'll do 16, and they lose these removal cases.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that doesn't stop them. All right, well, dude, good job holding down the fort while he is fighting the man again.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So tell us a little bit about what a sergeant at arms does.
So it's not literally, you know, like our officers, we have general titles, and then there's some descriptions of our jobs.
Mm-hmm.
For NALC Branch 79, it generally means that I make sure that, you know, people sign in during branch meetings and that management doesn't sneak in or anything like that.
Okay.
You know, nothing really that hard. But right now, because we rent out the room for our local labor temple for our branch meetings, I make sure to set up the starting of the branch, like, you know, the tables and chairs, and then clean up afterwards with everybody. Help, hopefully,
right,
to make sure that's clean after the meeting, because we're just renting the space.
Okay, I gotcha. So you kind of have to make sure that you maintain order, essentially.
Oh, of course, yeah. You know, if it gets a little bit rowdy, I try to come around and tell people to, like, be quiet.
Dude, right on. That's cool, man. That's an important job. We want to have, like, respectful and peaceful union meetings. Okay. So with that out of the way, let's actually get into the topic, the reason that I brought you here. So Virgilio is one of the OGs in build-a-fighting NALC. You said that your branch was like one of the first branches to join up with the movement, right?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
We did the contract campaign rallies.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. C. Moline mentioned those as well, that you guys were some of the first to do that. And going into the national convention, did you guys pass one of the open bargaining resolutions?
Yep, we joined the 40 other branches and we put our resolution to the floor of the state convention. That's why if you look at the convention booklet, it says Washington State Association, that passed it. So we represented the entire state.
Nice. That's fantastic.
Washington.
Right. So that's why I've brought you on here today. That's what I want to talk about, is that one of the lessons that we've learned from Build a Fighting NALC is that just wanting things to change isn't enough. You can agitate, you can complain, but where the rubber really meets the road, if you want to make permanent change, you have to take action. And in this context, that means proposing resolutions for the national convention that give advice and steer the way our union is going to go. And that also means making potentially constitutional changes at the convention. And that also means on the local level, making bylaw changes. So you were part of that. You actually, your branch brought forth a resolution that wound up going to your state convention, and then it went to the national convention. Talk a little bit about that process and maybe how you got people involved or what kind of pushback you received.
So we want to talk about the resolutions process.
Yeah.
We've been bringing stuff up since, you know, I've become active in the NALC. But one of the more infamous ones is the right to refuse resolutions for the 1260 rule that came up to the national convention that passed, that
right.
Everybody seems like is got really excited about. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it so, certainly has made waves. And the right to refuse is one of the better things to come out of this new contract. It's a shame that we have some of the other things attached to it. But the right to refuse is definitely a victory.
Yeah. So, you know, the process is, you know, you bring it to the branch level. That's why building Fannie and NLC is very important if you want a structured process to, you know, because you have to have an organized group of people to come into a branch meeting, right? Like a couple people. I mean, our branch meetings, you know, it's not that large. Like, you know, quorums constitutes 25 people. So if you bring like five more people in there, typically, like, that's more than enough to hit the balance of scales if for a branch, you know. But our branch is very receptive to a lot of our ideas, so there's not really that many fights over like resolutions. So, you know, we send it to the state convention, and that's where a lot of the discussion usually happens again. And, you know, it either passes or it doesn't pass, or it gets modified. Mm-hmm. And then it goes straight to the national convention after the state convention. So it's like a three-part process to like filter through, have the discussion, you know, refine the ideas. So, you know, a lot of the resolutions that go get presented at the national level usually typically say like this state association did.
Right.
That state association.
Gotcha. Yeah, I got to say, Branch 79 is definitely one of the most progressive branches in terms of empowering the rank and file. You know, it seems like you guys have a good, strong rank and file movement where you really pay attention and care about taking care of just everyday carriers and the concerns of everybody from the top to the bottom. So credit where credit is due. You guys are doing a great job there at empowering carriers. Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I agree. Like, Branch 79 is like, you know, very progressive, very, like, you know, I call it the tip of the spear. Mm-hmm. Within the NLC, we kind of realize it when we go to state convention. It's like, you know, like we're like a third of the delegation because we're such a large branch for the state. So, you know, we have a large voice. So, yeah.
Yeah, good. Okay, so now it wouldn't be classed as a mail if I didn't do some reading and actually get into the nuts and bolts. So we've talked a little bit about why bringing these resolutions is important, but now I want to talk about the actual process. So guys, I'm going to read here from the NALC Constitution, Article 12. And Article 12 tells us how to bring out resolutions. And so if you want to put resolutions to the National Convention, this is the process you have to follow. This is what Build a Fighting NALC had to do to bring their resolutions, the 12 and 60 resolution that Virgilio was just talking about, and the open bargaining resolutions. This is the process. And Virgilio, feel free to jump in at any point. You can cut me off if you have specific insights into like how this works in the real world. Okay, here we go. Any branch in good standing or any state association may, at any time, forward to the National Secretary Treasurer resolutions properly attested by their President and Secretary Treasurer for consideration by the appropriate union authority. Okay, so Virgilio, in your case, you had your branch and your state association sign on to this resolution.
Yeah, so as you can see, it says that, you know, any branch or state association could bring it up.
Right.
But How it typically works in my branch is we would pass it at the branch level and send it to the state association for concurrence before we actually send it to the national level to, you know, build like kind of like the momentum on a resolution, right? Yeah. Because if the state association passes it, it means you that resolution represents the will of the entire state.
Right. It carries more just, like, weight.
Branch. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good call. Because in your state, there might be 20 different branches. And so, right, you're speaking for that. Yeah, that's a very good call. Instead of just having one branch next to it, that's excellent. Okay.
That's why, yeah. Like, you know, I think, like, Tyler's, you know, the Building and Fighting NALC movement to get, like, 40 branches and multiple state associations to do something similar was so powerful that, you know, it kind of overwhelmed any objections from the executive board.
Yeah, that's a good call. Right, when you see there's that much support behind these resolutions, it's hard to ignore them. Okay, moving on. Such resolutions must be in duplicate and each shall be on a separate sheet of paper. Resolutions pertaining to the National Working Agreement, which should, insofar as possible, identify the article and section to be changed, shall be forwarded to the chief spokesperson of the NALC negotiating team. So you guys, the 12 and 60 resolution, that had to do with work rules. So... That one had to have been sent, apparently, to the chief spokesperson of the negotiating team. I assume that's Renfro. Do you have any insights into that, like where it goes once it leaves you?
So it seems like it comes in front of the executive council for discussion.
Okay.
And, you know, they eventually, like, as you can see from the national convention, it either gets approved by the executive council
or right.
disapproved by the executive council. So... You know, it gets forwarded to the chief negotiator, which is probably Renfro or Barner or the work rules.
Right.
Depending. And then they bring it to the executive council for discussion and then whether they're going to propose to accept it at national convention or not.
Right. And I got to tell you, one of the most shocking things to me at the convention is how much weight those recommendations carried. I mean, you remember when they did that block vote where just like everything that they said no to was just no automatic, or everything they said yes to was yes automatically, or one of those two.
Yeah. That's one real life thing you will notice in a lot of votes on commendations, resolutions, either at local, even state conventions, is if the resolutions committee, for example, at the state convention accepted, like they would, some people would say like accept it all and block, and then they
right.
have a motion to accept it and block, and then, you know, it's to some would say it's to speed up the, you know, the way that we're doing things, because, you know,
sure.
people brought it up, why do we need to debate it if, like, you know, the body that is like has gone through it already has accepted it, right? But some would argue that, you know, maybe we should go one by one, but as we saw from national convention, everybody leaves by the fifth day. So
yeah, right.
Is it really representative if not a lot of people even see it?
That is the question. And that's part of the problem, is that there seem to be a lot of people who go to the convention for a vacation, for socializing. You know, hey, I can't stay to hear all these resolutions. I got an expensive dinner to get to that's paid for by my union brothers and sisters. And that's a shame. What it does, though, is it lets the people who are the most invested have more say, because if everybody's out at a Red Sox game and we're still hanging out, you know, but to your point, I would much rather see people stick around and actually take part in the process. And the more democratic, the better. You know, get people invested, get them interested.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on. That was resolutions about the working agreement. Next, spokesperson. Oh, wait. Okay. Those pertaining to legislation shall be forwarded to the NALC Director of Legislation, and all others shall be forwarded to the NALC Executive Council for their consideration and appropriate action. Okay. So legislation would be like for BFN, the right to strike. You know, that's a legislative issue where you guys are pushing for a legal change to allow us the right to strike.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that BFN is, you know, looking to do in the future is to propose a, you know, extension of the right to strike to all federal workers, not just us, because we're all federal employees. And as we are currently seeing that, while, you know, this is the result of the 1970 strike, the postal workers are relatively privileged, in my opinion, to be under the National Labor Relations Act instead of the Civil Service Reform Act. Because as you can see, the unfavorable administration to labor could simply attempt to eliminate collective bargaining rights to an entire
It's a concern.
1 million seven. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely an issue. And the stronger of a solidarity movement that we have, you know, the louder our voice can be. And a good example of that is the nationwide day of action that we had, where there were people protesting and picketing all around the country, and it got a ton of news coverage. And it seems like members of Congress took notice. And I know for me, when I was standing out on that picket line, like when people would drive by and honk and like really lay on the horn and really, you know, shout it out, I would get like emotional that, man, these people are supporting us. It feels so good.
Yeah, you know, postal workers are some of the most popular federal employees. I think we have like a 70 to 90% approval rating. It depends on, you know, who you ask, so to speak.
Right, yeah. Varies from route to route, I bet.
I heard that, you know, some folks were surprised when we went to these rallies that, you know, people were very, very supportive, you know, honking their horns, like, you know, put thumbs ups and everything. Because they see, you know, we're the only federal workforce that goes to every single door and address in the United States every single day. So they see a postal worker and they should see how hard we're working.
Yeah, no question.
We deserve to be paid better.
Yes. Yeah, no doubt about that. Okay, so to close out Article 12, those appropriate authorities shall report to the National Convention on all such resolutions and the action taken thereon. So that's where we saw at the convention that the executive board recommends disapproval or approval or whatever it was for each of these resolutions.
Yeah, so this portion of the NLC Constitution, I'm actually proposing a constitutional amendment to add that, you know, language saying that it says right now, report to the National Convention all such resolutions. I would add to the National Convention and what was it again? Let me pull it up.
Yeah, please do.
You know,
this is while you're pulling that up, I'll just tell the audience, this leads into something else I was going to ask for Helio, which is what are some issues that BFN has resolutions on right now that we can start working on getting passed at our branches? Do you have it?
Almost. I apologize.
No, that's fine. That's fine. Okay. So why?
Here we go.
Okay.
Did I not put it in?
Do you want to just give us the gist of it?
So I was going to add language in there to open up the, you know, availability of the resolutions booklet to all NALC members, not just the people who come to the convention that could see, you know, just summaries of the convention booklet, because, you know, we need to have access to the entire full text of resolutions that have already passed. Because one thing you will find out when you're trying to pass resolutions is you will get responses denying a resolution because it's quote unquote been passed before already.
Right. So and how do you know that?
Yes. And that is a main problem, in my opinion, is why is it our history being kept away from the rest of the membership? You know, why is it so exclusive that only like people who go to a convention where you have to fight to get actually paid to go fly somewhere? Like, you know, these just getting on the net, becoming a national delegate is a huge task for smaller branches. And why isn't the rest of the membership have easy access to see like what are the official positions of the NALC already? Like, this is one aspect that I always bring up. It's like, do you even know that it is the official position of the NALC that we should have a 32-hour work week? Like, that was passed like, all the way back in the 70s. So it's like you wouldn't even know that. But, you know, most of the stuff that Building a Fighting NALC is agitating for is already the official position of the NALC. It's just that people don't know about it. So they, you know, folks would say, like, we're being defensive or we're outside agitators. But that's not true. We're, you know, we're coming from the history of the 1970s where, you know, Vince Sobrato and the reform movement back then, like, took on the establishment and, like, you know, ran for the presidency, right? So, to me, it's like, people have gotten used to, like, how it's been, and we should be more democratic and make information more accessible to our membership like we have the materials reference system, MRS, where which has like documents from all the way back to the 70s and 80s.
Right, and they're
like,
searchable. Scans,
and they're searchable. Like, why is our national resolutions, which isn't even like, you know, does management really care about like, you know, what's in there, like, in my opinion? But for some reason, it has to be exclusively like hidden away for people to only see summaries of resolutions passed. It's like one sentence if you look at the resolution. They don't even know what it really says.
That's exactly right. And the only barrier to getting this done is just the will to do so. It's not like the data takes up too much space. Once it's in the record, that's it. Just publish the record.
Yeah. It's like, in you know, like that's always been a concern to me. It's like, there's no need to hide these things.
Right.
It's like, if we want to understand our history, if we want to know how to come up with better resolutions in the future, we should have make every single resolution that has been passed accessible in an easily searchable format. It's 2025. Like, we're literally, I always point to the MRS, like, we're citing documents from the 80s that have been scanned, and we printed them out all the time. It's like, what makes the resolutions booklet so special that it has to be locked away? Because Article 12 of the National Constitution says that only National Convention delegates can get a copy of it. Like, it's ridiculous.
Right. It is ridiculous. This is the express will of the members, of the highest. You know, when the president makes a pronouncement, it gets published and there's record of it or whatever. Like, I'm able to go online and look up presidential rulings and see a history of all these different presidential rulings. They all get published. But the will of the actual members of the union isn't published, and that's, to your point, you're right, Virgilio, that's kind of ridiculous. All right.
Yeah, and, you know, everything else from the convention gets, you know, published in a digital format. Why not this?
Yeah, it's a great question. Okay, so when you are putting forth a resolution, it's not, there's not a big barrier to entry. The idea behind this constitution is it's set up to be rank and file, where regular members can get together and propose these things that they want. So with resolutions, there is a format that is preferred, like with the whereas, therefore. With your BFN resolutions, you had to do that kind of format, right?
Of course. Like, you know, in a lot of organizations, even, you know, in the local labor movement, you have whereases and resolves.
Right.
So you can look at that up online and very easily come up with your own version.
Yeah, basically just copy it.
Yeah. You know, it's very straightforward. Like, whereases mean, like, this is the reasons why, like, the history of this resolution, why is this very important? Mm-hmm. And the resolves is the action items that you want National to do.
Right. And think of it as the whereas, you're making your argument, because you may not, you know, like when people see it in the resolution book, if people actually read it in advance of coming to the convention or time to vote on it, that's where your argument is going to be for why you think this should be passed. And so that's all those whereas statements. And then resolved is exactly what Virgilio said. This is what you want done. And so if that process is intimidating to you, then look online, look at other resolutions that have passed, look at the format that they use, and you're essentially just going to copy it.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I've heard of, is that the barrier to entry for resolutions is very low if you want to just pass it to the branch level and send it straight to national. No one's blocking anybody from, you know, just not sending even to the state convention and just sending straight to national after it passes a branch. And it used to be, like, you know, until recently, like, there were more resolutions being debated on at the national convention. It used to be, apparently, in the 90s, they would have, like, lots and lots. It's just that the past 20 years, you know, as we call it, business unionism has, like, infused our union that, you know, everything hangs hunky-dory. Just let the smart people run things.
And yeah, it's become very top-down.
Yeah. So, you know, and the resolution is just like a tool and a means to, like, express the will of the NALC. And but as we have seen the past year, like, the enforcement mechanism leaves wanting, you know.
Right. Yes, it does.
But it's the most democratic way of getting our voices heard, I think.
Nationally. Yeah, that enforcement mechanism speaks to this whole idea that we can't see all these past resolutions because, you know, in the charges that were put forth by Mike Cariff, and I know there was another set of charges as well that that maybe it was Cariff did a second one. But in any case, there were charges that were very specific that, like, at the convention, we resolved that you were going to do, you know, this thing about open bargaining. And then you didn't do it. You're defying the will of the membership. And that's critical for the members to be able to hold their leadership accountable. That's what this whole process is about. And that's where, when we say, when we're at the convention, that the assembled body is the supreme body of the union, that's how that body takes action. And so for the president to just ignore that, that's a complete failure of the union.
Sadly, that is so. Like, because in between conventions, the people who run the NALC are the national president,
right,
and the executive council. So, you know, I'm not going to get into the whole drama of the, you know, Renpro, but everybody knows what's happening. Hopefully people are taking actions, you know, in the 2026 is going to be interesting.
Right.
But I would have to say that the lack of transparency on the resolutions itself speaks to the just a hurdle that, you know, local membership, like, has to go through just to, like, become active at that. Like, if we're hiding stuff that's supposed to be, like, the will of the NALC, why is that?
Right. It's very much how, like, at the local level, there are so many branches where you can't get your hands on the bylaws. They don't publish them. They don't hand them out. And it's that same sort of mentality.
Yeah, that's the most ridiculous part of me. Like, you know, as I said, like, I'm very privileged to be in NALC Branch 79. I seriously thought that, you know, NALC ran like Branch 79. Like, I was so naive when I was first starting after the first few years until, you know, I have to give praise to Corey Walton. He has revolutionized the NALC by just being out there and, like, being a national figure, because the Formato Arbitration podcast has opened the door for everybody within the NALC to start talking to each other. Because before the Formato Arbitration, we were all just like, you know, oh, we'll see each other outside of our branch in state conventions. Maybe, like, some of the people who are really, really active go to national or regional, right? And then that's all when you talk to people. But now we have the technology to start talking to other people. And the podcast is a great platform that really opened my eyes to hear about the horror stories.
Yeah, it's the truth.
That, you know, that I'm like, I was shocked. Like, you know, I seriously thought that, you know, every other NALC branch ran like Branch 79, where the bylaws are easily accessible. We have a website. It's out there. You can read through it. Our LMOUs are out there. We can cite it. It's like, why is not, it's not that hard per se as a in 2025 to do all these digital things to make it accessible to people. It's shocking.
It's just the will
to
do it. Yeah.
No, it's not just the will. It's like, you know, it's shocking to me that people would actively disengage their membership by keeping hiding things from them that should be public.
Yeah, I agree completely.
It's like, I don't know. It's a difference in mentality. That's what I hope BFN is going to help change. There's a reason why, like, you know, BFN is wholly focused, not shitting wholly, but, you know, it largely focused, if you notice, at the local workroom floor struggles and at the branch levels. Because if you want to focus on the national issues and all of that, you have CLC running against, you know, their national leadership. If you want to do that stuff, like, great. Like, you know, CLC's out there. And BFN is focused on the rank and file, as we call it, because we are seeing the problems of not having an active membership at the local level, right? Like, that is holding their own leadership to account. It's like, because if everybody, you know, like, we have to change the culture at the local level so we don't, people who go float to the top be like the people we have right now. That's the theory of change that BFN is putting forward. Everybody thought like BFN, then we wouldn't have the fights that we're having right now.
That's exactly right. And it's easier to change the culture at that bottom level where you have direct access to your coworkers, to your union brothers and sisters.
So, I totally agree.
So with that in mind, rather than talking about amending the national constitution, let's talk about how to change bylaws. Because there are branches that have serious bylaw problems. I'll give you an example. Branch 36 in New York City, they've come on, some folks from that branch have come on to this show recently, and they have in their bylaws that their branch meetings are at 5 o'clock. And of course, you can see what the problem is with that. Yeah, people are still working. Like their typical start time there is 8:30. So you didn't even get off work until 5 o'clock. And then trying to get to the other end of New York City, it's impossible. So the only people who show up at those meetings are the officers and the retirees.
That's, you can see the problems now, right?
Yes.
I wouldn't say it's deliberate, but it's probably deliberate.
It's deliberate because they've tried to agitate for change and the union officers push back.
It's, well, what was their reasoning? Oh, well, you know, how are we going to get people?
Right.
I don't know. Sorry. Like,
I agree with you.
Were ridiculous.
Yes.
It's like, because the only other reasons why you would not, why would you have it at 5 o'clock when people are still working, especially in the postal service where management expects you to be at work 24/7. Like, honestly, that's, I think if management had their way, we would all be robots, like, you know, just hooked up to the postal service right all the time.
My own branch meetings. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, no, and you know, for example, my branch meetings, it starts at 7, at 5, at Wednesday, right? Like, and it's, even then, it's still like relatively inaccessible because, you know, we had to choose a location where it was cheaper to have the event, right? Like the branch meetings and transportation, you have to have a car to get here to the branch meetings. The public transportation is not as good in that location, but still, you know, 7 o'clock, you know, if you really want to go, you can hop on a ride and get to it.
Right.
But 5 o'clock.
Yeah. It's literally impossible. Yeah. And so you're disenfranchising these people who would want to take part. And of course, go ahead and take a guess how the officers of Branch 36 feel about Zoom meetings.
It's this, I wouldn't say it's very similar to my branch right now in terms of the Zoom component. There's pushback on having Zoom call components because I wouldn't just say there is hesitancy because, you know, people are saying like, oh, we're not sure if they're even listening. We're not even sure they're going to participate.
But
blah,
that's
blah,
true
blah,
in person,
like
too. You can't be sure that somebody's paying attention.
No, I agree. It's just that those are the kinds of discussions that come up in the Zoom component comes up for debate every time we say, why don't we have a hybrid component? COVID has shown that this is very easily done. Like, if you want to ask questions, you can type it in chat, and then the sergeant at arms, like me, could just, like, raise my hand and say, like, hey, there's a question in chat. Stuff like that could be done. It's just that it's just a different mindset. Like, you know, like, the Postal Service has a lot of, you know, the older end of the scale in terms of the age, so they don't understand. I would say, like, you know, the technology has advanced enough that it's very easy to get people involved if you have Zoom. Like, when we were having Zoom calls during COVID, like, we would have, like, 30, 40 people show up. Well, at branch meetings, we can only get like, you know, 25, 30, you know, so you can see like there's a percentage increase if you make it more accessible to people because not like Seattle's huge. Like the NALC branch 79 goes all the way up north from, you know, Shoreline, Everett, all the way down south to Renton or Enumclaw, Bellevue on the east end, Bainbridge Island on the west end. It's like a huge, the whole Puget North Sound. So, not everybody is able to get on a car and drive to the branch meeting
to
hear stuff. And that's what I'm hoping to turn my local chapter of BFN is to fill in that gap and starting like a Zoom meeting, like on Sundays before like a branch meeting, just to fill in that like gap of like, you know, inaccessibility to the branch meetings and have a free branch meeting. Like that's one thing that people should start thinking about if they're going to start a local BFN chapter is to,
one of the changes, one of the changes that I want to see at my branch, because this has really hurt us recently in my reform movement, is our branch doesn't publish the agenda for the upcoming branch meeting. And so when we get there, we're taken by surprise about what's going on. But of course, the officers, the people who are on the inside, they know full well what's coming and they prepare for it. They get people out. They've got their arguments. You know, they're ready to go. And that just tilts that balance of power even further toward the good old boys.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about changing bylaws. So I'm going to read from the NALC Constitution, Article 15. Each branch or state association may make, alter, or rescind such bylaws, rules, and regulations from time to time as may be deemed most expedient, provided they do not in any way conflict with this Constitution. Bylaws of branches may be amended at any regular meeting of the branch, provided the amendment has been submitted in writing at the last previous regular branch meeting, and suitable notification to members shall be made at least 10 days before the regular meeting at which the vote is to be taken. All right, so we'll stop there. So any member of the branch can introduce a bylaw change. And so what you'll do is introduce it at the meeting, and they don't vote on it then. You're just putting it forward. You're essentially putting everybody on notice that, hey, I want to make this change. And then the branch has an obligation to publish that change, whether it's in your branch newsletter, it gets posted at all the different stations, you know, whatever that mechanism is. And then at the next meeting, we'll move on. Bylaws and amendments there too, fixing the amount of, 10 days before the regular meeting at which the vote is to be taken. So yeah, the next meeting is when the branch will actually vote to change the bylaws. And in some cases, you may need a 2/3 majority, but that's it. That's the whole process. And then there's a vetting process. So there should be a vetting process in advance to make sure that your bylaw change doesn't conflict with the Constitution. You know, and then go ahead.
Yeah, no, in Branch 79, we actually have a bylaws committee where you can propose bylaws changes, and then it would go through that refinement process, right? Like what we're trying to say. Because as you can see here, like, it's very easy to propose it, but sometimes you might make some consequential changes that you didn't really understand.
Right, exactly. And that's what the role of that committee should be. Yep.
Yeah, like not to block it per se, but to like refine it and make sure it's like, you know, consistent enough that it won't make too much of a drastic change, right? That, you know, with consequences that you didn't really realize when you were trying to make it. But yeah, no, that's how it is in Branch 79. We have a bylaws committee that you can propose changes to, and then they'll go through it. And, you know, that's how it should be, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Branch 79 is really heavy on committees. So, you know, like, we have committees on picnic, we have committees on organizing, we have committees on, you know, various things. So hopefully more branches can do that.
Yeah,
so
getting delegate people activated and involved, that's key.
That's the crazy part. Like, you know, like, I shouldn't say crazy, but it's like, you know, not everybody has to be an officer in the branch. Mm-hmm. You can be very active in a branch without being an officer, because we need people. Like,
right, same goes for being a grievance handler. You don't have to be a grievance handler to help the union.
Yeah, you could be like the guy who just writes statements for everybody.
Right. It's like, yeah, it's exactly. Simple. Yeah, there's a ton of stuff that can be done.
And
dude, being a website manager is phenomenally useful. Yeah.
Oh yeah, no, especially in 2025. It's really important to have a really good website.
Yep, exactly. Okay, so that's the process in the NALC Constitution. And then once your bylaw is approved by your branch, then it goes to the National Committee on Laws, where they're going to do that same thing, where they're going to make sure that this bylaw change didn't have unintended consequences, that it doesn't conflict with some other standing rule. But you probably also have provisions in your own bylaws about how the bylaws get changed. And so I want to read the one from my own branch. This is Article 11, Section 22. These bylaws shall not be repealed, altered, or amended except by 2/3 vote of the members present and voting at the regular meeting. All new bylaws must be presented in writing at least one regular meeting previous to action being taken thereon. And that's it. That's the whole setup. And that pretty much describes the whole process. So yeah, we need a 2/3 majority to change our bylaws, but that's it.
Yeah, we have also in our bylaws some changes to that, like, you know, in from the NALC Constitution. Mm-hmm. It also says that, you know, other than the 5 members in good standing, it has to be presented to the Bylaws Committee of Branch 79 for study 30 days before the first reading on the branch floor. Action on the proposed change shall be taken at the next regular meeting or special meeting called for that purpose for the first reading. And then there's a section 2 saying that a defeated amendment shall not be submitted in like form for 6 months thereafter.
Oh, that's a good, I like that, so that you don't just keep getting spammed with it essentially every month.
Yeah, so, you know, so that's one aspect of the our bylaws that, you know, for our local, that would, you know, just keep, make sure that things go in the straight and narrow, so to speak, and as you said, not spam the same amendment that gets defeated each time.
Yeah, exactly.
Some might say it might be undemocratic, but to me, it's more of a, like, you know, hey, let's think about this a little bit more.
The branch has spoken. We've decided we don't want to do this. Let's have a cooling off period. You know, mm-hmm. It doesn't say you can never bring it up again, But it's, to your point, prevent the spamming. And if you don't like it, you can always propose to repeal that part of your bylaws.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, absolutely. All right, guys. So I think that pretty much covers what we wanted to talk about. Again, the big takeaway here is that we want more than just complaining. We want our listeners, we want the members of the BFM, we want people who are reform-minded to know that you can take action, that the barriers are not that high to taking action. Get your idea, put it out there. And it's kind of the same mentality with filing grievances, where if you see a positive change that you want to enact in your branch, you see something that needs to be done, you put forward that bylaw change. If it gets voted down, you've lost nothing because it just stays the way it is. You know, it's the same as doing nothing. There's nothing really on the line if your bylaw change gets voted down, because that's what's happening anyway. And so don't be afraid to get out there to push those boundaries, to try to make things better, because that's what our union needs. We need it so desperately.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Like, but bylaws changes are very important in that it could make your union more democratic. For example, in Branch 79, we elect our stewards in our station.
Same at mine.
At the informal level. And that's done yearly. So, you know, if you don't like your steward, you can vote them out the next year.
Right. Yeah, you're not stuck with them for 3 years.
Yeah. So, and when I heard from, you know, other branches, that, you know, that, oh, the branch president appoints the stewards, I'm like, I don't know.
You know who likes that system? Branch presidents.
Well, of course, it gives them a lot of power and all that. But if you want to have an engaged membership, right, like, hey, having elected stewards is a very good thing, in my opinion.
I agree completely. Because
it holds your stewards accountable, and it makes the process more democratic and participatory.
Yeah, yeah, no question. All right, guys, so that's what we have for today. Thank you very much, Virgilio Goze, for coming in today out of Branch 79. You guys are doing great work up there. And thank you to the BFN, Build a Fighting NALC. Thank you to Tyler Vassar for hooking me up with Virgilio. And man, I really appreciate you coming on. You did a great job explaining all this stuff, and appreciate the good work, man. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
All right. So for Virgilio, I am Alan Gigax. Thank you guys for listening, and I will catch you next time.